Today on Parent Time, we talk vocal layering and the craftsmanship of intrigue as we chat to Jason, one half of The Pop-Ups, on Benny Asking People Questions. Children's acts push the boundaries of children's and families' music, constantly challenging the youngest of our community to think and express beyond the usual. However, my next guest and his bandmate go one step further to the point where it is only through listening to the occasional lyric one is reminded that this is deeply lush musical scape and lofty transporting production is indeed intended for the youngest in our society. Their music is impossibly catchy. And it's no surprising that they joined the elite of Grammy nominees. I am thrilled to be joined all the way from Brooklyn, New York, by one half of The Pop-Ups, Jason Rabinowitz. Thanks for talking to me today.
It is my pleasure, Benny.
Excellent. Now, This was a pretty exhaustive interview for me, getting to know you, because it's a pretty busy career The Pop-Ups have had. There's a lot to go through. You and Jacob, like, it feels like, you know, I would go on YouTube and just go, oh my goodness, there's so much stuff here for me to watch. And then it just seemed to be constant. I mean, right from the get-go, you and Jacob, what are your backgrounds? Because there's no chance in hell this is the first time you've ever written music.
No, of course not. I found music as a youngster, and I never looked back. There was no choice for me. Mm. So I've been writing music, and, you know, before there were even four tracks, I would, you know, record something on a cassette, play it on one machine and record it and play along with it, you know, like very old school style.
Yeah, amazing.
But Jacob, actually, who is, you know, it's occurring to me, he would have loved to have been a part of this interview. I wonder if at one point we can even patch him in. He would probably be delighted.
Yeah, sure.
He comes from an entire family of musicians. His father has actually won a Grammy for children's music.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think you're the first lineage in
definitely.
Children's music.
Well, here's the funny thing. Jacob tried as hard as he could to avoid his fate.
No.
I mean, it's almost like it's like a Greek myth. He tried, you know, he went to art school. He's like, I am not going to be a musician like my,
That's
I'm not going to be a kid's musician like my dad.
Music.
And here he is.
And he's also got that, I mean, unfortunately, he's also got that thing of, like, you know, you tend to get into your parents' things to impress them.
Right.
And who'd have thought that three Grammy nominations still wouldn't be as good as your parents?
Yep.
Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, no. Voices are great. We use them to create. 'Cause we're here to demonstrate. The most fantastic trait. Okay, so then I kind of fell sort of backwards into making children's music. There was an early childhood, like, music program in New York City called Little Maestros, and the woman, Marnie Connor, who started it, she was incredibly good at spotting people that were suited for this, and she saw I had a band at the time called the Blood Sugars, and she came and saw us play, and she called me like every day for a week, and she was like, you have to do this. This is
Wow. You,
I know that you have to do this. And she really forced my hand. And so I started to, you know, play music for kids. The program was set up, like, there was like a drummer, a pianist, and like a guy with a guitar and a gal, and it was a, like a four person band, and there would be like a bunch of like babies running around, and we would do like kind of quasi rock concerts for them. And and then I started writing for that program, and I produced their records, and then Jacob hired me to do, he was doing a one-man puppet musical, and he hired four people to be in his band. And I was like, this lunatic, like something inside me said, I think we should work together. And I just said it like that. I you know, after we did this crazy thing, this guy's pulling puppets out of a suitcase, talking to himself like a madman. And I'm like, I don't know, I feel like me and this guy, we should make something.
There's something deeply unsettling about this man. I need to
Work with him. Or like deeply silly. And like in a way that I felt like resonated with the deep silliness in me. Like we're both big, silly people. We're like, there's something disarmed about him, and in a way that really, like, I don't know, it resonated with me.
Yeah, it's a beautiful description. Beautiful description.
Put it down.
Pick it up.
Put it down.
Pick it up.
Put it down.
Turn yourself around. Turn yourself around.
I would say that's a bar to entry, like a minimum barrier to entry to kids. Doing
totally,
kids, like
totally.
Being disarmed. Well, that's the thing, Benny. Like after like playing to people with their arms folded, you know, holding a beer at the back of the room, you play with these toddlers and their bodies just rock back and they're just totally with you. Yeah. And I would go in every morning, I kid you not, I'd go in every morning like, and I would leave after doing it three classes, like my battery's charged. It would just charge me up full of happiness.
There's something, and it's a pretty common theme through all performers for children, just that there's an energy you get that just you just simply don't get anywhere else. You really genuinely don't get anywhere else. And it's almost matched by the energy you get from the parents that are grateful for entertaining their children.
Yeah. Yeah, and you have to match it as a performer or you'll lose them.
It's a very discerning crowd. They'll let you know if they're not into it.
Oh, yeah. You got it, yeah.
So it's not like... Let's fast forward to 2010 when you basically start work on Outside Voices. So you'd already started, I guess, creating ostensibly children's music anyway. So this wasn't a huge step out of your comfort zone, or was an individual solo project with you and Jason, with you and Jacob. Was this still quite daunting?
No, check this out. So he had started an infant toddler music program based out of a temple in Tribeca. And so both of us were doing music for these infant toddler programs that had all this oversight. I mean, I would try and get weird in writing material for this program, and they weren't having it. So this is why I tapped him after this. And I said, look, I could tell that he understood kids, and I could tell that he was a weirdo just like me. And I wanted very much to write my kids music the way I wanted to. I wanted to write kids music that I wanted to listen to. I wanted to write kids music that didn't talk down to them, but you know, I'm sure it's the same story all around. Everybody, the kids love the Beatles. Kids love Rage Against the Machine. Kids love Bonnie Raitt. They don't care. They like music. So anyway, so here's the story with Outside Voices. This was the first thing. This was when maybe a few weeks after I said, you want to get together? We both had spring break where we weren't working. And we got together every day during that week, and we wrote and recorded, I want to say, 80% of Outside Voices.
In that week.
Week, 7 days. We got together every night. We stayed up late. We were having tons of fun. And we just let ourselves write whatever the hell we wanted to.
Yeah.
And it was cathartic, and it felt really good, and I could feel it. I when we had it, I knew that it was probably the best thing I'd ever made. And so, you know, we took it to this thing called Kindy Fest in New York City, which at the time, you know, Dan Zanes was speaking there, and, you know, there were...
It was a big deal.
It was, yeah, it was like, you know, whatever. It was... I liken it to like A Mighty Wind, if you're familiar with that movie. You're like, you know, it's like a very specific little scene. But the great part about it was that people were really kind. It's yeah. not like no one was cutting each other down. Yeah, everybody yeah. was really kind. I think we just gave out the record to as many people as we could. And one of them was Bill Childs. He has a radio show called Spare the Rock, Spoil the Child. And he's in Austin, but the scene was small enough, and it got to this.
Yeah.
He said, he passed it on to this guy, Stefan Shepard, who reviewed kids' music for NPR. And he had a blog, and his blog said, called it the kids' music debut of the year. And then, you know, people started being interested, and that was that. The way our partnership works, I kind of turn the dials, and I'm the, you know, he doesn't have music production experience, so I kind of get to have say there, and he has good insight, but he gives me a lot of rein. He gives me a lot of rope.
who builds the vocals in your stuff, particularly in the later albums? By the time you get to Giants of Science, who's behind all the harmonies and the lofty vocal sounds? And is that you? Do you get to do that?
Yeah, that's me.
Whenever you're sort of looking through someone's catalog, there's always this thing where you watch the music change over the years, and it can change for a million reasons. It can change for, you know, live performance. They've started to see a different thing. That, you know, there's reasons why their music will grow or morph into something different. But one of the things with the pop-ups, which broke my heart in a wonderful way, was by the time I got to Giants of Science, those really beautiful, strong harmonies that were happening, you know, that were there in outside voices, almost just became the source of the music by the time Giants of Science came along. And it's so beautiful. They're so considered. I mean, do you spend a lot of time? Is that kind of stuff important, or is that kind of stuff just a natural attraction for you, so you can't help but spend a lot of time on that kind of stuff?
Well, I definitely believe vocal arranging can set apart a good song and make it a great song. Like if you look at the Beatles, say, and you take away the vocal harmonies, they're still great rock songs, but they're not special. So I believe vocal arranging is one of the secrets to making exceptional pop music. Not calling our own music exceptional, but I'm saying that is the tool. That people who understand it can really augment. Well, just like, yeah.
No, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
Well, no, just like orchestration. People who understand how to color with an orchestra, they can just. I mean, yeah. I've taken like little demos. I put a you know, a somewhat considered vocal arrangement on it, and all of a sudden it's a song, you know, like it just changes the gravitas of it all. So yeah,
inventor. World needs you now.
You can really hear that, though. I mean, you can hear the love that goes into those things. I think one really interesting thing that I love particularly about your vocal arrangements, which sort of jumps me ahead to the lyric content, but with your lyrics, because of the scope of your music, you know, the lyrics sometimes not disappear, but you become so enthralled in the music. Mm. The lyrics sometimes, you know, you've got to kind of bring yourself back to listen to the lyrics. And I was sort of thinking about that, going, oh, is that ideal in kids' music? Is that what you want? You know, I mean, just how did I feel about that? And then, what I then realized is one thing that you do is your stuff, your songs, they're ideas, and then you repeat the idea again and again. I think a really classic example of that one is Getting the Job Done, where, you know, just that line, Getting the Job Done, you kind of know what it's about. You know what I mean? That is enough without any other words. That's enough to make you go, okay, I get it. I get it. I get what this is about. Mm-hmm. And then you listen to that song and yes, there's really beautiful lyrics and you can get in it. But then if you do lose yourself in the song and then the vocal arrangements, what you just have this repeated line, particularly in the last 30, 40 seconds, getting the job done, getting the job done, which I think is what enables your vocals to be so rich and complicated. I mean, you know, I have a habit of reading too much into stuff. is that kind of like when you're creating your lyrics and things like that? I mean, is that sort of stuff that you're conscious of? Because it can disappear when you have such thick vocal arrangement.
Well, to be honest, this is something we have that I would say is probably our main. I don't want to say tension because it's not tension between us, but tension between our stuff and us. We both are classroom teachers. So we, you know, outside voices is very, we wrote it kind of for the classroom, and the next album, Radio Jungle, we also wrote for the classroom. And so we always, so there's a tension between just wanting to run free through the fields of music and also making sure that our music is saying something specific. This is another thing that is just, for me, it is so wonderfully freeing to write a song about shapes. It's just concrete. Yeah. You don't have to work. You don't have to wonder. You have a very clear task, you know, outlined for you, and it's just the structure of that is delightfully freeing. Anyway, so we want the music to be able to be understood. It's not just for its own sake. It is most definitely written for children and for children to understand and get something from, you know, but that is a tension that we have because it is tempting to just, you know, run away into the music. But we usually approach an album thematically where we'll, you know, like we would a unit on, in a classroom and be like, and try and, Like Appetite for Construction. We really wanted that album to, you should be able to listen to a song and then have a craft that comes out of it. And we, I mean, we tried that thesis, like, okay, like there's a song, Puppet Playground, and we kind of walk, and it became really hard to like, how do you like, you know, there was a, how do you not make it like, just like a list, like, you know, it's to find the art of it, you know, like, and then there was another craft night with, there was like, we would like, we were listing how to like make these crafts and pictures making pictures, how to make a collage. They were like, anyway, so you know, we're definitely aware of really, and our super egos are engaged in trying to make this music read to children.
But it is there, and I think that's, you know, my and you know, when I, as I was saying, my first thought was like, you know, these lyrics kind of disappear a bit, and then I kind of was just, you know, I relaxed into that and just sort of calmed myself down and just sort of went.
Right.
But the thing is, it's the music's so much more. I think what's really beautiful about your stuff is you can go either way with it. It was this really, I had this sort of constant sort of grapple with going, well, do I lose myself in the music? Do I lose myself in the lyrics? Where do I go with this? And then I just kind of went, well, just go whichever one you want to go with right now, which is the beauty of it. It goes for 3 minutes, get to the end, go back to the start. Like it's just no big deal.
That's the goal, Benny. I mean, the music I love, I can listen to again and again and still get new things out of it. So I think, you know, and I've never listened to music ever in my life. I never listened to the lyrics. I only listened to the music. And then in my adulthood, I've learned, I'm like, holy cow, there's like a whole other level of meaning in all of this. Like, you know, like the... So like, but like, yeah.
Bob Dylan is so much better now that I've heard.
Yeah, I know. Oh my!
It's incredible.
I didn't discover Dylan until my 20s because like I didn't get it until then. Until I learned how to listen to lyrics, and yeah, it's funny. I just taught my daughter. She was doing this unit on poetry. She's in second grade. And I was like, we're going to listen to Lily Rosemary and the Jack of Hearts. That's like my favorite Dylan song. And I made her read the lyrics, and like we like unpacked it. Like we spent like all morning talking about that song. But yeah, so but like, you know, like I think that make it like if you can find something new every time you listen to it. That's the idea of layering it up.
Popsicle Eddie is a magic trick. Just eat some ice cream and then keep the stick, oh yeah. Oh la 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 la.
Well, I also think that is just fundamentally in your music, both lyrically and musically. I mean, I just, you know, with most of these things, you know, your first chance is you just listen to it when you're sort of mucking around in the house with the children or driving around somewhere. Then you get a point where you get to sit down and unpack it a bit more confidently. And you know, the deeper I went in, the deeper, I mean, it was almost overwhelming the deeper I went into the music, because it's just, I mean, particularly, I mean, I'm not as accomplished as you, but I'm a fan of the lyrical build-up and the vocal build-up. And, the stuff's just very, it's quite overwhelming, the vocals. It's just so beautiful. With the lyrics, I mean, you know, you're literally only a few linguistic choices away from making a Divine Fits album. I was trying to work out what the agenda was. So, and when I mean agenda, I mean, you've sort of touched on it briefly, but you know, there's this big thing in music where people, you know, they want to empower children and they want to give them these different, everyone sort of, it's very, not, I don't think trendy is a fair word, but there's a lot of thematic kind of stuff out where people go, okay, I really concentrate on the environment, I really concentrate on self-care, I really concentrate on this. I do find with teachers you tend to, because they do that all day in their jobs, they tend to just want to write stuff that's just engaging on a, not nonsensical, but just a kind of relaxed kind of way. And I was trying to work out what your agenda was with your lyrics, because it's, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it is this thing where it's about the energy. Your lyrical content seems to merge with the music. It's all about the energy. It's almost about this. It's about you creating this scape of world, of this worldly adventure kind of thing. There's this underlying context of experimentation, exploring through all your stuff, through all your music. And it's almost like it's not about ideas. It's not about lyrics. It's about just presenting idea after idea. I think Mirror to a Mirror is a really wonderful example of this. It's just a, it's just an idea. I don't know. Is this kind of a fair comment? Like, I feel like a lot of your stuff is about just going, hey, look, just look around. There's stuff around, you know?
Yep. Well, I think that's definitely fair, and that's definitely how we approach it on some level. And on another level, it's evolving, you know? Like, holding up a mirror to a mirror is actually an outtake from the Great Pretenders Club, which was an album where each song was kind of loosely around pretend play. So, you know, here's what I find. Like, any idea you have, it's really rare to execute it perfectly. So it winds up being more generalized anyway. You know what I mean? Like, you could start out with a song, you're like, and it turns out, like, because we were just talking about, because I used to love that as a kid, just like looking down the corridor of you know, mirrors when you hold up a mirror. And that was like a game, but it turns out it's also a science concept.
Yeah.
You know, and so it works. I don't know. So there is a general exploration. I love that you get that from it. That's definitely how we approach things. We approach things curiously and not from a point of knowing.
And it is almost like just thinking of it just then. I was just, when you were talking about looking down the hall of mirrors, I was just reminded, it was only just yesterday my daughter was just sitting on the couch quietly, and I sort of said to her, yeah, you okay? And she's like, yeah, I'm just staring outside. And I looked outside and noticed there was a bit of wind and sort of the clouds were moving, and she was literally just taking time. And then she said, come and sit with me. And I was like, oh, okay. So we just sat for, you know, probably 10, 15 minutes just watching what was happening outside the window.
So cool.
Yeah. And I guess that's what your music is it's this ultimate kind of engagement with daydreaming in a way where you really provide, and I think you do that musically, you provide that space to just
go wide.
Just drift into the adventure, you know, just drift into the curiosity and drift into the, I don't know what that is, but that's kind of quite fascinating. What is that?
I love that. I love that. I mean, that resonates with, I feel like you're peering deeply into, I don't know, you're hearing kind of who we are at heart there. I think that's kind of how we approach it, especially at this point. It's best explored with a big open mind, and you know, not too tight grip on the reins, and see where it takes you.
Yeah, totally. And I think, and you know, let's just go back to the production stuff for a minute. Otherwise, we'll just talk about imagination for, you know, 3 hours, and then at some point, someone will go, I don't even know how they made their albums. Go, yeah, we just didn't get to it. so with, I want to just quickly on Outside Voices. This isn't a question. This is just pure comment. Turn It Up and Turn It Down, when they say up and down, sorry, and you say turn it up, turn it down, you literally turn the music down rather than actually just pull the band, you know, like, you know, traditionally someone might go, oh, quiet, and everyone plays quiet. You literally just turn the volume down on the band. So that was amazing. I just thought that was so great.
I was proud of that moment. I was like, oh, that's meta. That's kind of like breaking a fourth wall that doesn't even exist in music.
You're turning down the song mid-song. Amazing. I heard that and I had to go back and listen to it, because, you know, obviously the initial instinct would be to get the musicians or whoever to play quietly, whereas you just went, oh, no, it's just turned down. I was like, oh, my God, that's just extraordinary.
Turn it up.
Turn it down.
Turn it up.
Turn it down.
Turn it up.
Turn it down.
No, turn it up.
Turn it down.
Do you have quite a pool of musicians, or is it all just the two of you in your spare room?
It is mostly the two of us in the room. I have a drummer that I've been working with for many years. His name is Kenneth Salters, and he is probably the best musician I've ever worked with.
Yeah.
In my life. You know, it's interesting. It's evolved. So like at first, you know, we didn't have any money to spend on this record. It was just something we had to make. It was all just like, you know, barely programmed drums and, you know, and then we started investing more. The second album, I think we could afford to have him play on like one or two songs.
And then you take and that then, track and loop it and use it for all the other songs.
No. Yeah. Well, the track we had him play on was a track called Math Rock. So it was truly impossible to use it for anything else.
Yeah, yeah.
He played in every time signature. But then we as our career, I guess, has justified more investment than we've put more into it. And anyway, so there's Kenneth, and there's a wonderful arranger I use for the orchestral arrangements. His name is Charlie Rosen, and this kid had to drop out of college like a teenager to pursue a career on Broadway as an arranger and music director because he was that brilliant
good.
And talented. Yeah, and he's like a sweetest guy, and so I'll hand him something and he'll hand me back spun gold for like pennies on the dollar. He's brilliant.
Wow. And are these people you just know these people from around the traps? So they're just kind
of. Sure. Well, we have a deep bench of talent in New York. And, you know, and then we're in New York City, so there's a lot of, you know, Broadway horn and string players I use. And we have very, very excellent musicians. And when we pull together a live band, we have my bass player. Now, his name is Brendan O'Grady, and he actually produces the Story Pirates podcast and does a lot of their music. And so he and Kenneth, bass and drums, come from both. They were both in Little Maestros, and they were both in my band that this woman had seen and recruited all of us, essentially.
Shins are made under tremendous pressure. Have they really formed?
Your albums come out every 2 years, roughly every 2 years. Unlike Casper, Baby Pants, or, you know, Secret Agent Skidoo, who seem to just bring them out monthly, as it turns out.
Yeah, Secret Agent.
Now, I get the sense, initially I thought, does it just take you that long because it's that continue, put that much effort into it? Then I just saw how much other stuff you're doing. How does it work for you? Like, is there a decision where you wake up and you go, well, it's been a couple of years now, we should pump one out? Or is it a bit like, does it take you that long to, what's the gap? Is it just you're busy?
Yes. Yes. And at this point, you know, the pop-ups is our job.
Yeah.
So the pop-ups do a lot of work that, you know, we did an Audible, a book for Audible last year. We're engaged on many different things. We kind of see ourselves as like a media company, like the two of us at this point. We write, we help co-create, and actually we produce, we book, we manage the Wow in the World live tour. So, you know, and we're in that. I'm currently producing a daily show for them for NPR. It's called Two What's in a Wow. So it's like 40 minutes of audio content a week, fully scored, sound designed, mixed, edited.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
So we're super busy. I mean, just the other day I had finished the last episode of the week, and I went to this track that I've been playing with, and I was just pining to get working on it. And I just, particularly now in quarantine when I'm doubling as a homeschool teacher and I can only work, 2 days a week uninterrupted, it's like, Yeah. So in general, yes, our 2 year album cycle, it's due to just trying to keep the ship afloat, keep it all moving. And
well, you just got to have, yeah. You got to have all those hats, don't you? I mean, I think that's also particularly in the children's world, but, and I think this current situation that we're all in, being locked at home.
Yeah.
You know, I think what it's brought to the fore is just how desperately everyone needs that online content and how you need that online presence as well as just the pure music. I mean, 20 years ago, you could just have the albums and the tour.
Exactly. You
know, whereas now you've just got to have this and constant, you know, it's got to be refreshed every single week. I'm very reluctant to launch into that world because I just don't think I've got the stamina to be able to persist with that amount, you know. It's a lot of work.
Everyone can engage wherever they have the bandwidth for. I mean, don't let that stop you from putting something out, you know. Just go with whatever you got, and it is what it is. I mean, we had no grand I mean, it's not exactly true. We did. We sat down when we first got together, and we're like, okay, we have some grand ambitions. Let's, you know, we want to be the next Jim Henson. We were developing a TV show with Amazon not long ago, for a number of years, because we have this kind of visual element. Jacob studied, he has a master's in visual art, and he got his undergrad in visual art as well. So like as I said, he was running desperately away from his God-given fate as a children's musician. It's so funny.
It is funny. But you always should gently remind him that his father could have, you know, there could have been a million other things that he could have, you know, forcibly found himself into. You know, his dad could have been a used car salesman or something.
Sure.
So, you know, there's a lot of well-trodden paths you would prefer to not, you know, crawl through the muddy.
Yeah.
Fire, faster, greatness, goal. You can't get free without FNG.
This is a pretty big question from the production side of things, so just bear with me as I read this one out. I had to write this one down because it's just going to take too long otherwise.
Productions is my favorite.
Yeah. So when musicians get – pardon me. When musicians get into family music, often they feel largely liberated by the idea of it. It's a bit of a less discerning crowd, meaning that they'll be happily judging you from song to song. You can flip between genres, and oddity and lunacy become tools in your songwriting, which is definitely, definitely prevalent in outside voices with things like F&G and Pastor and stuff. Up and Down being another great example. I also hear... which, you know, as I said, you can hear in that album. I also hear in that album a large amount of live instruments and band work. And then 2 years later we get to Radio Jungle and it still has that flamboyant flavour, more so even, I think, than Outside Voices, such as The Bat, which is also a physical action song, which is very traditional kid stuff. Sure. We got Best Fruit, Feelings Change and Elephant. And then we move to Appetite for Construction. We still have that live element, but we are now getting heavily synthed.
Yeah.
And your moments of lunacy or experimentation, I guess, or musical flavor is happening within the song rather than the whole song itself. And a good example is Pictures Making Pictures. When you talk about cutting images out in verses, you are using a satirical voice with that sort of stuff. But then, of course, we get to the Great Pretenders Club and we begin the journey into these lofty vocals and big sounds, and it feels like it's trying to hold on to the old pop-ups, but then, you know, but it's still getting – it's expanding. And 3 years later we get into Giants of Science. And I feel there we just – we leap into the synthesizers, we leap into those monster vocals. And I feel on the outside when spanning 5 albums and 8 years, it doesn't actually audibly sound like a big jump or a progression is there. But then it is there. Like I don't know how to explain it, but it feels like you started off trying to just have fun and play with it, and then as it grew, you've gone, actually, you know what, this means more to us.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've created your own groove. I mean, as the producer mainly, how do you feel you've grown in the last 8 years? Or what do you recognize in your songwriting? Yeah.
Well, so it's kind of two different things. As a producer, I definitely feel like I know, I don't know, I've sort of found my voice in what I can do. We actually just produced, an album for another artist. Or I guess I produced the album. Well, we both did, actually. We co-wrote it with her and produced it, and it's actually coming out in June. Mm-hmm. Her name is Suzanne Jameson. The album is called Bounce. So we've kind of found our, voice as producers, in a way that, you're making albums for 10 years, you get a better command of. But also, Giants of Science, I tried to make that a pop record. I mean, that's pretty much as close as I could come, to a straight pop record.
Yeah, you can tell.
Hers is even more so. Right, exactly. I mean, that was trying to appeal to a broader audience, I guess. We both are children of the 80s and kind of love that. There's a practical element in that, synthy stuff I can make by myself in a room, whereas I have to pay the guys and I have to schedule it and I have to write the arrangements, and it's a little simpler, but it's also kind of where the choice in Giants of Science to go, try and go for a pop sound was very purposeful and in an effort to reach more people, which might work or might work against us. Who knows? I don't know.
It got nominated for a Grammy, didn't it? So,
yeah.
So, it's worked all right.
Yeah, it's worked all right.
I don't really know what more you want. I know what Jacob wants. He just wants one.
Yeah.
He just wants one. So yeah. He has something to talk about at Christmas dinner.
Yeah. Exactly.
I love to eat my favorite treat made from wheat. It's a meal complete. Gotta have my spaghetti.
As a song, I guess, for example, let's look at Live. I mean, has the development of the pop-ups with your performance and your interaction with the audience and stuff like that, do you feel that's changed what you're putting down on your albums? Do you find yourself going, a good example is the lyric, for example, FMG is this really incredibly beautiful song. But what's really beautiful about that song is it has this really one incredible lyrical content. And so subsequently you create the music around it so that the lyrics are really upfront and heard and audible. But you don't do that much stuff now. So have you also just realized, okay, this is what people are responding to, and this is where we're feeling really comfortable. So is it an indication of a movement into a pop up future, or is it just you going, hey, let's just give this a crack for an album?
I would say the warmer, it is comfortable. It is, it's interesting, Benny. Like, our career as the pop-ups is now a lot more than a band. So we're still figuring it out. In terms of live, since it's just the two of us, and, I, in large part, take up a lot of the musical instrument side of things, and Jacob kind of leans toward the lyrical side of things. Mm-hmm. If we were, going to go Rodgers and Hammerstein about mm-hmm. it, our live shows, we've always kind of designed as kind of like for that For outside voices, we had my brother-in-law had a young, my niece was very young. She loved that album, and he said, "Hey, would you guys, you know, would you guys want to like make a musical around this?" And we did. Yeah. We made a musical called Pasta,
which is amazing song.
And we wrote a narrative. We hired a production designer. We made props. We rented a black box theater. We put on this show. We had a really good run. We brought it back to New York. We also had a really good run. We brought it back to LA again. We had a really good run. Wow. You know, it was like, and then we tried that for Radio Jungle. And then we realized like, whoa, this is a lot of work and a lot of gigs. You know, we'd get gig offers at this point. We were starting to get gig offers, and you know, it's too much to put up a musical for like an hour, 40-minute set afternoon in a park somewhere. So we realized that but nevertheless, our live thing has always been more about imagination and play and props and comedy and like kind of like including an audience. And it's like a show. We call ourselves a prop act, actually.
Yeah, I did notice that, it seemed to make total sense, even though I had no context to put it in. For some reason, right. Just from your music, I went, yeah, that surely that makes sense. Total sense. Reginette, Signorelli, Tagliatelle, Tripoline,
Adelini, Fellini, Fongini. So, just a couple more, then I'll let you get on with your life. It's kind of funny, I just had a thought about the idea of image, because when you're performing music for adults, you know it's kind of funny. There's this, depending on the kind of music you create, you sort of don't do image. You know, you sort of. I mean, everyone has an image, but you pride yourself in not having an image. You know, because you don't care. It's about the music, man. And it's funny when you get to children's music, it becomes all about the image.
But
because it's a dress up make believe image. There's something incredibly liberating, and I think particularly when you start pulling that apart, like you're saying with your live shows and all that stuff, like what are we? You also realize that it just doesn't matter what you are.
Yeah,
it's almost like as long as there's a red background for every picture, so the kids know it's the pop ups.
Right,
you can be whatever you want. From step to step.
In my experience, actually, that's not actually even true. The music industry at large is very concerned about image. I mean, maybe 30 years ago, it was about the music, man. But in this day and age, no one has any pretense about that. It is very, very much about like, what is the image? What is the brand of this? So the pop-ups, I mean, we have experimented with, you know, what we are. But really in the end of the day, we are kind of who we are, and it does change and it does evolve. And we haven't gone like, we're the guys that wear this. In this day and age, we actually just perform in black. We both just wear black because for 10 years we were like, we need a costume, we need an identity, and we never did it, Benny, because it wasn't us. It's not who we are. So we just, at this point, we just gave up. We're like, look, let's just at least look clean. black pants and a black shirt, okay?
For the love of
like, okay, that's
shame.
Something we can. Exactly.
Shame, all right? Let's make it.
Exactly. So, I mean.
That's amazing. That's brilliant. Yeah, no, perfect. But no.
Yeah, no, sorry, go ahead.
No, you go. It's not about me, it's about you.
What was I going to say? But it is liberating to let go of your, like, to take on another identity, or like to be, quote unquote, Jason. Yeah, like when we perform, you know, I'm quote Jason and he's quote Jacob. Like, we are the pop-ups, and we're not ourselves in our normal life. It's funny because that persona sticks with us with everything we do. Like we're developing a podcast now, and those are those guys. Like we know who those guys are. We've been developing them for 10 years.
I guess that's the beauty of music for children, isn't it? Is all that stuff that might seem contrived and complex and really tricky and really considered when you're approaching adults just is a bit more fun and insane when you're doing it for children, and you can kind of just get it wrong because no one cares. You just start again. You know, you don't have to make a decision that's going to last for the next 40 years, and if you get it wrong, then too bad, you're just stuck with those pants.
I think that's the trick with art, Benny. Like, it's funny. So my family has been making these like quarantine movies, basically. Mm. We reenact a joke every week. It's called Joke of the Week, or it's called This Joke's for You. We just like my two daughters are the stars. There are no adults in this world. It's only puppets and them. And the first one was totally tossed off.
Yeah, it was terrible.
I thought it was pretty good.
I thought it was terrible.
Wait. Let me make my point though, which was that we had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
It was tossed off. We didn't care. We threw it together, and then the second one we had even more fun with, and it came out really good.
Yeah.
And then by the third one we started, you know, kind of making more like critical choices. By the fourth one we started arguing amongst each other about these critical choices, and by the fifth one we had to take an extra whole week because I was agonizing about it. So it's always like the case with art. So like kids music may start that way, but 10 years in you're taking it very seriously, but you have to always fight against it. And I think that is where art is great, right? Where you have to like chill. You know what I'm saying?
Totally. I know exactly what you're saying. And I think
keep that curiosity, that child mind, the Zen mind.
Oh, yeah. It's such a great call. It's so true.
Dr. Bronk, the brontosaur, wiped his glasses on his sleeve. He looked again through the telescope at something he could barely believe.
That's a really great spot to end, but there is one question I really wanted to ask you.
Go for it.
I'll ask the question and then I'll just drop it in earlier on. I want to know the song Meteor Dinosaur.
Mm.
Okay, so I could be very wrong. I could be very wrong with this one, but I probably spent a little bit too long reading into this thing, so I'm going in there with this one.
Okay.
Now, this song to me feels like a real step away from the usual lyrical content of what the pop-ups do. Now, the reason I feel this is there feels like there's a real meaning behind this song.
Sure.
And I'm trying to grapple with what this meaning is, and I have some theories like, is it about trusting science? Is it about seeing value in what might not be seen at first or might seem impossible? Is it about working together to survive? Is it about putting trust in others? I just feel that song in particular, out of all your songs, it just felt there was something else going on deeply behind that song.
So, Giants of Science in general was kind of our direct response to Trump getting elected. You know, here comes this idiot who's, you know, a climate change denier in the midst of like the most important moment in the human race so far. And here we are now in 2020, and science is going to, as with anything, like, this has happened a couple of times in our songs where we'll write a song and we'll try and make it about something. I don't even remember what that song started out as, but we were thinking, and then as a laugh, we were like, ha, wouldn't it be funny if we could make that song about, like, extinction? And we were like, and we like came up with like a dinosaur meteor, and we had a big laugh about it. And then later we were like, huh, actually that is the song. That happened with Bird and Rhino too. That song was about something totally else, and we were like, wait, these songs have these two different sections. It's kind of like a, you know, like a bird and a rhino. And we just like wrote that in a night and recorded it in one take, and that was that. And then, so Meteor Dinosaur, it was my wife. Most of my good ideas come from her, I'm not gonna lie. She was like, you should really, you could make this song about, like, you know. So that song is about all of those things. It's poetry, it's about hope for humanity, it's about trusting science and scientists, it's about, you know, pivotal moments in world populations that can, and it's also a fable. It's my favorite song, and Jacob's, both of us agree, this is the favorite song we've ever made.
Well, I'm glad it stuck out then. I'm very thankful that I picked up on it then, because there was something very, you know, like Isaac Asimov about it, you know, there's just this kind of, it was very surreal, but I just felt like underlying there was something very important that you were wanting to say or trying to say. And I think it's there. I do definitely think it's there.
Good. Yeah, no, you felt our yearning and our gravity. Like, we both, what tends to happen with us is we get caught up in, we get interested in things. Like, right now we're both incredibly passionate and very interested in engaging around climate and climate science and empowering, because it's so clear that children are not waiting for us, nor should they, and they should have the license and the strength and of character and feel empowered to do something about it. And they are. They don't need our permission anymore.
Yeah.
They realize the world is theirs. And adults, I mean, it's incredible. So we're both really energized around this. So I'm glad that comes through.
Yeah, we do. There's a big, I often talk with my other teachers here about this idea that, you know, whenever we talk about the old ways, and I use the old ways, you know, meaning 15 years ago, you know, my general comment is we're only one generation away from a whole new set of lawmakers. And that's the truth of it, I think. I think we are truly seeing the shedding of humanity's skin, you know what I mean? I think we're going through the process of getting rid of the top layer, and underneath is going to be this fresh new skin that's ready to take on all the stuff that the older skin couldn't.
Yeah.
And
I think that's how it's always been, right?
And I think, I think it happens every 100 or so years. And I think this next, you know, I think there's so many things that happen, particularly in education, that I just go, this is a system created by people that could stay at home as a single, you know, with one parent working, one parent at home. We're not in that world anymore. Everything's changing.
Yeah.
But the people in power aren't from that. It's not their fault, but they're just not from that situation. They'll never understand the situation, because we are humans. So it's the people that understand the situation that'll come through. Jason, awesome, amazing. I love it. It was such a great thing to get to know your and Jacob's music and content and output. It's just rich and it is endless. I really barely got into it. There were some things I stumbled on. I just went, you know what, I'm just not even going into that, because I don't have time. My notes are already over 2 pages long. That's usually my you know, litmus test on how long an interview is going to go for. And I went, this will just go for too long. I really, really appreciate your time talking to me today.
Benny, I really appreciate your interest and your sense of care around this. This is our life's work, so it's great. My pleasure.
If you'd like to know more about The Pop-Ups, then head along to their website at www.thepopups.com. parenttime.com. And of course, for more Parent Time goodness, head along to www.bennytime.com. Thanks for listening to me, Benny, asking people questions.